From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Stephen Michael Scherer returns to From the Bookshelf this week. We last spoke with him when his great biography of Hedy Lamarr, Beautiful, The Life of Hedy Lamarr, was published. He is also the author of a fine book on the life of Patricia Neal, the Academy Award-winning actress best known for her role in The Day the Earth Stood Still. That book was first published a few years ago, but has just been reissued as a paperback and an e-book. The book is called Patricia Neal, An Unquiet Life. Stephen Michael Scherer, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I think this is a personal book for you. You knew Patricia Neal.
I did. Pat Neal was a very good friend of mine. We had met about 20 years ago. I was an actor then, and I was doing an off-Broadway play. Pat and the head of the Theater Guild and his wife came to a performance of that play, and I got to know Pat after that, and we just became very good friends over the years. And after 9/11, Pat asked me, are you ever going to write a book about me? And I hadn't written a book. I had done some film and book reviews, film book related book reviews, and a lot of research at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and I had never done a book before. But I did have a window of opportunity for a few years to do this project, and I did my research, I did my interviews, I actually had the luxury of a couple of years to put the thing together, and with production at the University Press of Kentucky, who actually published the book in 2006, it more or less established me as a biographer, and led me then on to do the more mainstream, Beautiful, The Life of Hedy Lamarr. Pat Neal and I, as I said, were really, really good friends, but I tried not to make this a film, a fan-based biography, simply because so many of the fan-based biographies make the subjects walk on water. Pat told me that she would allow me access to her archives, her letters, her pictures, and access to her family for interviews. However, I had to tell the story, warts and all, and so I had to be very objective with this book, and I think it's a pretty thorough and accurate accounting of her life.
Elle, I want to talk about some of the warts, I guess you'd say, of her personal life, but first, I think it's possible that some of our listeners might be unfamiliar with Patricia Neal, despite her long and celebrated career, so tell us a bit about her professional career. She began as a stage actress?
That's correct, Gary. She acted formerly in Hellman in Another Part of the Forest on Broadway. She was the first recipient, actual human recipient, of the very first Tony Award, which in those days for ladies was a compact. The Tony Awards were held in 1947. At the Waldorf Astoria, and there were a couple of technical awards given out at that first ceremony, and then Newcomer of the Year, which is equivalent to Best Supporting Actress in a role on Broadway, was given to Patricia for Another Part of the Forest. That particular play established her on Broadway, and she was back into Hollywood. She signed a leading lady contract with Warner Brothers and made about a dozen motion pictures in the early part of her career, among those The Breaking Point with John Garfield, a retelling of To Have and Have Not, perhaps the best Hemingway story ever filmed, according to Hemingway. He was more pleased with that project than any of his other works that were filmed. She also did, her second motion picture was with Gary Cooper. It was The Fountainhead, based on the novel by Ayn Rand. She developed a deep love and respect for Gary Cooper. They had quite an affair. And it was actually disastrous to her career because there was a Hollywood Wives Club at that time. in Hollywood and Hollywood Wives Club. They didn't mind their husbands necessarily having affairs with beautiful actresses, etc. But if those affairs threatened the home, then action was taken. And basically, Pat was drummed out of Hollywood. She was ostracized at social events. There was obviously pillow talk, and her contract, which stipulated leading lady roles, the roles that were offered her became less and less important. And indeed, she was actually given roles in a couple of westerns, one of which she turned down and one of which she did. When she and Gary Cooper broke up, she went back to Broadway and reestablished herself on Broadway with Lillian Hellman's The Children's Hour. And she met a short story writer then, Roald Dahl, British short story writer Roald Dahl. And they wed and started their family and lived 6 months of the year in the United States, the other 6 months over in England. During that time, Pat did a couple of motion pictures. The most important one, possibly the best picture she ever did, was A Face in the Crowd, directed by Elia Kazan and written by Bud Schulberg. That particular film is shown quite frequently on Turner Classic Movies, and she's very, very good in that picture. And, of course, she was in Breakfast at Tiffany's as well. And over in England, tragedy started befalling the family. But she actually had filmed one motion picture. She was on screen less than 25 minutes in a movie called Hud with Paul Newman in 1963. It won her the 1964 Best Actress Academy Award. And it's actually one of the smallest screen appearances of a Best Actress winner. But that particular motion picture marked the peak of her success. However, tragedy, as I said, followed her, and in 1965 she was fallen with a major stroke at the age of 39. But she did overcome that and made a motion picture comeback in 1968 with Martin Sheen called The Subject Was Roses, and was nominated once again for Best Oscar Actress for that year as well. Her film appearances were very far and few between after that. And those are basically the film highlights and career highlights of Pat Neill. She did have a stellar turn over in England in Tennessee Williams' Garden District, which was a two-play production. The second play was called Suddenly Last Summer, which was, of course, made into a motion picture with Elizabeth Taylor and Montgomery Clift, Katharine Hepburn. Patricia portrayed that the role of Katharine in the production in 1958 in England, in West End. And the critics, I have never seen such terrific reviews for an actor or actress for a stage performance. It was a stunning performance. It was a shame she didn't get the film role. But that particular, the reviews that I gleaned and have put in the book from that particular stage appearance are very telling. The actress that Patricia Neal was, Norman Lloyd, who was associated a great deal with Alfred Hitchcock. Norman Lloyd, still with us, he's very elderly now. He directed Patricia in a La Jolla Playhouse production in 1951 or 52. And he told me, when I interviewed him for the book, he told me that Patricia Neal stayed with theater, she would possibly have become better known for her theater work and become a grand dame of the theaters like Helen Hayes, Ethel Barrymore, etc. But Pat, of course, wanted a family. She raised her children, and they're all grown. One child, of course, died, and we can talk about that later. But Pat herself was a remarkable woman, a wonderful person. Unfortunately, my generation and generations younger never got to see her perform live. Elia Kazan told me when she stepped in for Barbara Balgettis in 1958 as well on Broadway, Balgettis took a two-week holiday. She stepped in for her in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and Eli told me that perhaps it was her Southern background and not to take away from Balgettis' award-winning performance, but Patricia Neal, her Southern background, he said you would have had to have seen her perform in that play. Unfortunately, there are no reviews of her in that two-week run, but one can only speculate what Patricia Neal was like on stage live.
Well, we're speaking with Stephen Michael Scherer, and his first book has just been reissued in paperback, and it's called Patricia Neal, An Unquiet Life. Well, you know, there's a sort of a subtext or theme in your book, which is, you know, it not only takes us through her life and career, but it also sort of shows the effects of a young life that was at best callow and perhaps amoral or unethical. I mean, she admits to breaking up a marriage when she set her sights on actor Peter Cookson, and who she later kind of unceremoniously dumped, and then her affair with Gary Cooper, who was married.
Well, I think, you know, that's indigenous of the times, too. There was a high verbal moral standard in the United States in the 30s and 40s, and I think use the word indigenous. Any time you have beautiful men and beautiful women who are paid to perform and make love to each, simulate making love to each other on the stage or in the screen, it's only human nature to be attracted to the co-star. And Patricia, I don't want, you know, you use the word amoral, and I think that's possibly a more gentler word. I'm glad you didn't say immoral. It's possibly a gentler, more gentle word than immoral. But I think basically that it wasn't anything unusual at that time. That doesn't make it proper. But still, I think there is. I didn't set out to make a theme through the book. I just told the story as it was. And like I said, that said, warts and all, there were several times I took the completed manuscript, which was twice as big as the final book. I took the manuscript to Martha's Vineyard and spent a week reading it to Pat. And there were several nights before I read to her that I was afraid that there was going to be an issue, because I did touch upon a lot of things. I didn't leave anything out of the book. Out of due respect to Mr. Dahl and due respect to the children, I didn't tell their stories necessarily. They have their own stories to tell. But with Patricia, she gave me everything. There were certain things about Gary Cooper that I was afraid she would take issue to, but she told me, she said, I knew about this, I knew about that, and it's true, leave it in. But Pat did suffer later in life, of course, the great tragedies that befell her, and those tragedies, I think she was at peace in her final year. She had made peace, certainly, with Gary Cooper's daughter. Gary Cooper never did divorce his very Catholic wife. He had had plenty of affairs before and after, and even during his time with Patricia Neal. He was a great love of her life, and they did become pregnant, and they did have an abortion. But that was very, indigenous of the times. It would have ruined their careers. It certainly ruined Ingrid Bergman's career. Around the same time that it ruined her career here in the United States. But at any rate, Pat has often told me she thought a lot of the tragedies that happened in her life. She said, I kind of think that I might be being paid back. She actually wrote this in her own autobiography, that God was coming back to let her know of the things that she did. But still, she was a good woman. She did have a belief in God. And toward at the end of her life, she became a Catholic shortly before her death. So I think repentance was very important to her. But in those days, when you were very, very young and very, very wealthy and very, very much in demand and being thrown in the arms of a beautiful man or a beautiful woman, it's very hard for actors to reel in the senses, if you will, and put a halt to at the end of a working day.
Well, she had some great co-stars in her films, and I was interested in the fact that she was not a big fan of John Wayne when she first worked with him.
She wasn't.
She did two pictures with him.
That's right. The first picture she did with him was at the end of her Warner Brothers contract at the first part of her career, a picture called Operation Pacific, and Wayne at that time was going through a very bad divorce, and he wasn't the nicest man to be around. He was getting the big build up. He had just been nominated for an Oscar for Sands of Iwo Jima, and this particular Warner Brothers film was giving him to be a great hero. And so he was under a lot of pressure, and Pat did not like his behavior on the set, not only to the director, but to other people on the crew. But years later, then, in 1964, over in Hawaii, when Otto Preminger had her and had Patricia and John Wayne, Kirk Douglas, and a handful of major stars in harm's way, John Wayne was a very likable individual at that time. Pat enjoyed his company a great deal. He was a good man to work with, and she often would tell that particular anecdote about why he was so nasty in 1950, and yet such he was happy in his marriage, and he had children, and in 1964, so things were good for him, and thus he was good to be around. But Pat did star with a lot of important actors. Her first co-star in film was Ronald Reagan in a movie called John Loves Mary. They did
Ronald,
another movie.
You say Ronald Reagan. I don't believe I've heard of him. He was an actor, Ronald Reagan? Oh, no, I guess. I remember him now.
Yes, former late President Ronald Reagan was an actor, yes. They did another movie called The Hasty Heart, which was a brilliant motion picture made over in England, again for Warner Brothers. It brought Richard Todd an Academy Award nomination. It's very rarely shown, but it is a wonderful film. She made a second motion picture with Gary Cooper called Bright Leaf, and she turned in a very fine performance. There's another motion picture she did with Ruth Roman and Eleanor Parker called Three Secrets. It's never shown, I don't think, on television anymore, but it is a real woman's picture, a real three handkerchiefs motion picture. It's really good. But John Garfield, like I said, was one of her great leading men. Andy Griffith starred with her in A Face in the Crowd, of course. That was his first motion picture. And her least favorite male co-star was George Peppard in Breakfast at Tiffany's. He was getting the big buildup at that time and just impossible to deal with. The late Blake Edwards gave me a wonderful interview for the book, told me, verified that particular anecdote, that Pat and Peppard did not get along in that film, but very few people remember her in Breakfast at Tiffany's. Of course, it's Audrey Hepburn's picture all the way through.
Why did you choose your subtitle? We're talking with Stephen Michael Scherer, and his book that we're discussing is called Patricia Neal, An Unquiet Life. Why An Unquiet Life?
Well, Pat's life was full of turmoil, good, bad, and indifferent. She came from very humble beginnings, like most of us. She did have a very firm foundation in her upbringing, But she was determined and talented and beautiful, and she wanted to be an actress at a very, very, very early age. So through luck, through talent, through perseverance, and she made it in theater. She made it in film, and surprisingly, she did quite a lot of television as well. But it was never easy. There were always conflicts. I don't think any great successes in life come without conflict. And Pat, after her stroke and her rehabilitation, after her career waned, after her divorce from Roald Dahl, which was very painful, Pat never remarried. Pat went on a lot of speaking tours, lecture tours. She sailed with the Theater at Sea, with the Theater Guild, for many, many years. And she used to give a speech about her life. She used to tell her life to people in the audience, and it was very compassionate and very emotional. When I started writing my book, the book was called Patricia Neal, Portrait of an Actress. University Press of Kentucky were none too happy with that particular title. So Pat and I, that week that I was up at the Vineyard reading the manuscript to her, she suggested I use the title of her speech, An Unquiet Life. And it was very apropos, very telling that she would give that to me. And so that's why I've called it, why I called it An Unquiet Life. Indeed, it was an unquiet life.
Well, she was plagued with health problems. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, actually, the only health problem she... Her mother lived to be 102 years old, and Pat was always in fairly robust health. She had an aneurysm in 1965. She was pregnant in 39 and pregnant with her fourth child. And on the set of this film she was making for John Ford, she had her stroke, and she was in a coma for 3 weeks. And when she came out, she was aphasic, and she had to rehabilitate, and she had to learn to talk. She had to learn to walk and read all over again. And Roald Dahl and two of the nurses from UCLA went back to England with Pat and the children, and basically, with the help of Valerie Eaton Griffith, created a way for Pat to come back. They worked with her daily, 8 hours a day. They Roald, sometimes ruthlessly, in the eyes of a lot of people, forced Patricia to do for herself. And she always spoke very highly of her husband in that regard. He did bring her back with the help of these other people and the townspeople in this village they lived in outside of London. But Pat's health was always very, very good. Toward the end of her life, she did suffer another stroke, but it left actually no telltale damage other than the damage that her first stroke had given her, and then of course she developed lung cancer the year before she passed away.
She did live to be 85? She was 85 at the time of her death?
She was born in 1926 and died in 2010, and I talked to Pat frequently. We had done a film together in 2007 with Billy Ray Cyrus and Heather Locklear, a movie called Flying By, directed by Jim Amatulli. Billy Ray Cyrus was the star of that, and Pat played his mother. At any rate, that was the last time I actually saw Pat, but I kept in touch with Pat every month, at least once or twice a month we would talk. And I talked to her at the end of July, and I knew she had had the cancer removed in the one lung, and I was told that she was recovering. I talked to her, and she sounded very robust. I kind of always thought that Pat would be with us forever. And I told her I loved her at the end of our conversation, and she said she loved me. And I told her, I said, well, Pat, you really sound good. You really sound healthy. And she said, well, yes, that's what they tell me. But, my dear, she said, some morning I'm just not going to wake up. You will come to my funeral. That kind of jarred me, and I made some kind of remark about, well, Pat, you'll live forever. And then she died a couple of weeks later. So it was kind of a not only for me, I think for quite a few people, they just didn't think it would be that quick. But at any rate, University Press of Kentucky did allow me to do an update of the last 5 years of Pat's life. And I'm very glad that they did, because Pat still remained very active. She still toured with the Theater Guild. She gave performances and speeches. She accepted awards left and right, Lifetime Achievement Awards. And like I said, she did do that last motion picture, which I thought was very important. She was a working actress for over 60 years.
Which of her films were her favorites?
Well, she was very proud, of course, of A Face in the Crowd. She thought that was a very good film. She loved HUD. The Day the Earth Stood Still, she wrote about it in her book, and, of course, I elaborated it in my book. And, of course, books have been written about The Day the Earth Stood Still. There's no modern science fiction movie that cannot not be held up to The Day the Earth Stood Still. It became a classic within years after its release, although 20th Century Fox just kind of put it out there. They didn't make a lot of ballyhoo about it. And Pat and Michael Rennie had quite a jovial time delivering their lines in that film. But in hindsight, because so many sci-fi fanatics and so many legitimate film historians have honored that particular motion picture, Pat is very proud of her participation in the movie. When I was a little kid, I saw that particular film, and I saw Patricia Neal, and I was a savvy youngster, and I knew that that was a movie, and I knew that was a man in a robot suit. I knew that, but still, just the way she was reacting to the events going on in that film, I was terrified. And it's kind of, you live long enough and things come around. And I remember telling Pat the first night that I met her back in the early 90s, I told her that anecdote, and I told her, I said, you know, you were one of the first actresses I really remember. And I always, at that time, I told her, I said, I always wanted to be an actor. I wanted myself to have that power to sway the emotions of the audience the way she did. When I started writing that book, I was kind of aware of some of the films she had made, but I wasn't that well-versed in her theater career, and certainly not her television career. And the woman has a great legacy, a great canon of work. And I have to, and Gary, I have to tell you, I had to look for bad reviews, and there were some bad reviews on Pat. But I really had to look for him, because even in some of the worst projects she ever did, she always handed in a sterling performance. I could not have asked for a better subject for my very first book.
Well, your book, Patricia Neal, An Unquiet Life, it's a fitting tribute, and it's also filled with some marvelous pictures, many of which I know are from your personal collection and from her collection. And the author, Stephen Michael Scherer, thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Well, I appreciate it, Gary. Thank you for having me.
That closes the book on this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on iTunes and Facebook. Production assistance on From the Bookshelf is provided by Francis Venegas. Thanks, Francis. I want to thank our guest, Stephen Michael Scherer, and his book is called Patricia Neal, An Unquiet Life. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.